On today's episode of the Fear Me Out podcast, I have the pleasure of welcoming Michelle Perrott onto my podcast. Michelle is a really fascinating woman. Her mission in life is to liberate 10,000 entrepreneurs, coaches, healers, and creative people from their fears and their social conventions, and to help them carve out expanded possibilities in their lives and then the lives of millions of others that they are serving. She does this by providing bespoke coaching, healing, and consulting services through an execution of marketing projects that accelerate her clients' visibility and impact. I hope you enjoy Michelle's episode. She's a very fascinating woman. There are two basic motivating forces, fear and love. When we're afraid, we pull back from life. When we're in love, we open up to all that life has to offer with passion, excitement, and acceptance.
Coming to you from our studio in Santa Barbara, California, this is the Fear Me Out podcast. We're not your typical self-help program. Our show takes a deep dive into those psychological issues that affect us on a daily basis. We hope to shift your perspective and have you experiencing emotions differently. Now, Dr. Dana Saperstein.
Welcome to the Fear Me Out podcast. Today, I have the pleasure of introducing Michelle. Michelle, it's really kind of you to come on my show. I think I met you through your publicist of some kind.
Yes, that's right. Dauntless.
Yeah. Michelle, I want you to talk a bit about who you are and so on and so forth, and I'll ask you a bunch of questions along the way, if that's okay.
Sounds great. Thank you. And thank you for having me on here. It's such an honor. So I call myself an intuitive guide and a business mentor. Okay. In particular, I help people to articulate what they're good at and package it into a business and an offer. It's not too often that we give ourselves permission to be entrepreneurial and to acknowledge all the multiple talents that we all have, and to understand that we all are here for a specific mission and to serve a specific group of people. And so that's really what I help facilitate in my one-on-one coaching and through my group programs.
Michelle, which part of the country do you live in?
So right now I'm in Florida, but I've been a little bit nomadic at the moment, which is great because I work remotely. So okay. I'm able to really station anywhere.
And where were you born?
So I was born in Chicago. My parents are from the former Soviet Union. Oh, so they immigrated in 1980. I was born there. My sister was born in Kiev. And after that, I moved every few years with them. So I went to Europe, 12 different cities or so, if I count correctly, between childhood and adult life as well.
And what was it like growing up from another country?
I don't know how to compare it, but I can say that, every few years I really got used to starting over, and it was very interesting for me to have to adapt to a new environment and a new language. And I felt like I acquired a different kind of personality in each place that I was in order to sort of fit into, the school and the people around me. And so it was very interesting, and I definitely got exposed to, so many different cultures and ways of doing things and being. So I'm definitely grateful for that. On the other hand, I also envy people who, have been in one place and have their, stable community and roots somewhere where they can specifically call home. Yeah. But But I think that I, you know, as a result of this, I've been able to be so adaptable and find opportunities in so many different places and not been really afraid to jump in and go for it. So, yeah.
And what brought your family to the United States? Was it your father's or mother's work of some kind, or what was the reason to find yourself here?
So they are Jewish refuseniks. So they kind of like refugees. And there was a specific opening the first time they got refused, unfortunately. And they left behind all their possessions. And they had to stop over, I think, in Italy before they got to the US. And luckily, they had a cousin already that was in Chicago. So that's how they ended up there. They had other potential options, but they landed, you know, in the U.S. So,
and how old were they when they came here?
They were young 30s, like maybe late 20s. My mom was late 20s. My dad was already in his 30s. And so they were relatively young. And started all over. And really part of the American dream, because they were able to start from zero and really make it, you know, after some time. And I think that's definitely due to, you know, their personalities as well. And my dad being very, you know, he didn't know any English when he first arrived. So, you know, they both had to learn. My mom knew English, so that at least that helped. But he learned everything he needed to learn. He got into jobs he didn't know how to do, and he would just learn it.
Wow,
and he climbed a ladder somehow. And then, you know, suddenly he became, you know, the head of the Eastern European office at Oracle. I mean, I'm summarizing, you know, what happened. But, you know, I think that's attributes to his ability to just be really adaptable and learn on the go.
And what year was it that you guys arrived here?
So they arrived in 1980, and I was born, you know, five years later, years later. Yeah.
So this was well after a lot of people that came from that part of Europe here, you know, during World War II or prior to that, like my family, they came from Poland and Russia and escaped the Nazis, because come from a Jewish family. They came to New York, as most Jews did during that period of time.
Right. Yeah, no, there were different waves, you know. And depending on where, you know, your ancestors were from. But right. Now my grandmother was in like the Ural Mountains during the war.
Right.
Was interesting times for her, I'm sure.
So growing up in the family, it sounds like they were a bit nomadic, that they went a lot of different places. Is that true?
That's right. Yes.
Yeah.
It was largely, again, my dad moved us according to different opportunities that he had, and, you know, was never really afraid to do it. So I kind of got that, you know, from him in a way.
Okay. Do you feel like it was traumatic to move? I moved a lot as a kid and I didn't like it at all. And that's why I've lived in the same house for 40 years as a way of creating stability, because
right.
Moving a lot, I didn't like it very much, but it sounds like it didn't have the same effect on you.
I think, you know, positives and negatives, right? Like I said, I think that the exposure that I got to different people, I think that really, if you think about it, weaves into, you know, the work that I do now, because I do a little bit of, you know, spiritual psychology with people. And I think that my ability to kind of relate to someone, even if they're from a different origin, really comes from, you know, getting to understand different types of people or knowing kind of where they're coming from. So I don't think I would have been able to have as much empathy, I would say, if I didn't have that kind of experience.
Okay.
So it really did shape me as a person. But yeah, I do think that there's this feeling, this constant feeling of after 3 years or so, okay, like, where's the next place?
Oh, okay.
I'm just so used to it. And it's almost like, okay, I'm now bored of this, you know, what's next? And so there's also this kind of constant like evolution too. Like maybe there's like, oh, there's the next city or the next country that is in line with where I'm evolving as a person. But, you know, it is a little bit of healing on my part too, to feel like, oh, I can just stay in one place and still also potentially evolve and grow, you know, just not having to move to do it.
So you mentioned that you do spiritual psychology. Just to be super clear with my listeners, what does that mean to you? What does it look like?
Yeah. I'm not, you know, a accredited psychologist, so I don't really want to call myself that. But I am certified in a particular spiritual modality called Theta Healing.
Okay.
And I do think that it is similar to psychology in the sense that we go over traumatic events in people's lives and really look at how it impacts where they are now and the patterns that are surfacing now and are preventing them from succeeding or are, you know, making them trapped in a specific situation. And it often has to do with core beliefs that we acquire when we're young, especially from the ages of, you know, 0 to 7, that's in particular when our brains are wired. And so looking at, you know, how we were trained and educated and started to view the world in that time period, but later on as well, can really deeply impact, you know, how we're perceiving the world today. And so there's a lot of that that we unpack just from a subconscious perspective, and we use meditation in primarily and connecting with source or whatever you want to call it, to help you understand what you're learning, what virtues you're achieving along the way of your challenge, and so that you can then, you know, release it and move on from it.
So when you talk about source, are you referring to that some people might call it God or your higher power or something, whatever yeah. adjective they want to use?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And I'm assuming, and I don't want to make any assumptions, but I'm assuming that that your intuition is a huge part of what it is that you do and how you approach what you're doing. Is that a fair statement?
Yes. I feel that everybody can develop this intuitive abilities. I didn't know that I had them, you know, until I started down the path of getting healings for myself. And then the more of that type of work and the more exposure you get to, you know, meditation and other forms of other modalities, the more you start to realize that, you know, you have different senses and you're able to pick up information in different ways, like, you know, clairaudience and clairvoyance and many, many others as well.
And the information that I'm assuming comes to you along with you teaching it to other people, how do you conceptualize it? Do you believe it comes from, do you use the word source or do you have a more, what's the term that you would use to describe where it comes from for you?
Yeah. For me, I do think it comes from both our higher self. I mean, you know, there's different levels or hierarchies within, you know, the spiritual realm. So it can be coming from source, or maybe it's coming from, if you want to call it, a guardian angel. For me, these are all, I think of them all as different energies. And I don't get too hung up on who or what is giving me the information, just rather that, you know, what information that is. And typically, it just starts with asking the questions that you want to get answers from. Okay. Yeah. And maybe you're not gonna get them right away, but you know, sometimes it's a form of prayer in a way. It's like, please, you know, give me some clues about my next steps in life, for example. And maybe you're not gonna hear something, but then, you know, you go about your day and then someone tells you something that's like profoundly, you feel that it's profoundly correct. So the information can come to us in a variety of different ways if we're open to listening and being curious and observing what's going on in our environment.
Do you think that this is something that you carried through your childhood and either recognized or didn't? This ability to kind of tune in?
I do think that I was very sensitive. I didn't know that I was, but I was very sensitive to energies. And I didn't understand why I was feeling bad in some places, and I was feeling better in others. You know, and this carried into, you know, when I was going to work on the train every day in, you know, Manhattan, my first job. And then going into the office, I didn't really quite understand why I was being drained. And later on, I started to pick up and understand that I was tuning into other people's energies,
right,
and kind of absorbing it, you know, unbeknownst to me.
Right.
So I've since been able to, you know, have different mechanisms that I can gauge that and also, you know, quickly kind of protect, you know, have like a spiritual boundary in a way for just protecting my own space versus others.
Right. And how did you come to this place? The reason I ask you that is because I see a lot of people in my practice who are what you would consider really highly sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of almost in the 95th percentile for sensitivity, like exquisitely sensitive. Mm-hmm. And most of the time when people grow up that way, they feel like there's something really wrong with them because
mm-hmm.
they don't feel like they relate to the world the way that most other people do. And a mm-hmm. lot of times people are ashamed for their sensitivity, especially men, mm-hmm. because, you know, it's looked at as a sign of weakness.
Yeah.
So part of what I try to help people to do is the same thing that you're talking about, which is help them realize that it's a gift to be really sensitive because it helps you come up with novel solutions to problems and it helps you become way more creative. But it also does not make your life easier the more you accept it. It actually makes life more difficult because you can't believe that things are okay when they're not.
Yeah.
And that, you know, ultimately it involves sometimes more conflict and discomfort because the more you trust what you know, the harder it is to betray yourself and be unfaithful to yourself. So you're sort of saying the same thing in your own way. I'm just kind of curious about how did somebody talk to you about this, or did you seek help in some way to come to this place, or did it happen on its own?
It happened. I want to say it's divine timing, but astrologically it was my Saturn return. So I was 29 and I was living in San Francisco at the time, and just feeling like there was some kind of lack in my life. I didn't really quite understand why, because technically I had an amazing job and, you know, from the outside perspective, like what else would I desire? But I had this sort of emptiness and void. And so I think I was not religious in any way. I didn't believe in God at that time. I didn't grow up religious, so I didn't really have that aspect that I was exposed to up until that point. But I did have some family friends that were into Kabbalah.
Oh,
so
okay.
That's where I started my exploration. But interestingly, I went from 0 to 100 because I went into a specific mystery school that taught Kabbalah. So they taught it more from an energetic perspective versus kind of more mainstream Kabbalah Center, I would say is more, you know, intellectualized and theoretical.
Okay.
And so I really went from knowing nothing about energy to then, you know, talking about all kinds of concepts that I really thought was absolutely insane. And yet I stuck with it. I mean, it was like a 10-month Kabbalah program. And my curiosity, like there was something in it that I just kept going, even though I thought, okay, I probably joined some kind of cult, like what's going on here? but then, you know, I kept an open mind. And then at the very end, we had a retreat and I had a real visceral experience, I would say, of God that was not just theoretical. It was, you know, it was like a feeling. It was a real, and again, I can't really quite explain it, but it was for certain for me that it existed and there was something beyond the physical world. And so that really is where, you know, my journey began.
And are you close to your family at this point?
I am close to them. I would say, you know, they're not into any of this kind of.
I was wondering how they took your transformation and from digestion.
It's been an evolution, I would say, because at the beginning, you know, they were very, very much against it. And you know, I kind of kept it as a hobby. So at the beginning, so I think they were like, this is fine if you just want to do it on the side. But the more serious I got about it, the more resistant they became. Even though, you know, I had some sessions with them where they actually had some pretty amazing breakthroughs, but I think nonetheless, they just can't really intellectualize it overall. And so I've just had to accept that, you know, and understand that, you know, they are where they are. And, but yeah, interestingly, in their own way, I think they've gone in their own directions of exploration. Like my dad is really into the Flow Institute.
Really?
But he only really comes from a scientific, he likes the scientific lens.
Right.
And like anything that will help him, you know, do better, faster, you know. So he's looking at it from that standpoint rather than actually connecting with
right.
A higher self or a higher power. So,
okay. And I'm assuming he's probably close to my age in his late 60s.
He's already 75.
Oh, he is. Okay. So, you know, he and I are sort of old school. And if he didn't grow up in California, then he's probably not going to be as open as I would in coming from a place like growing up here. It's a bit of a different place than most others, and especially where I live now in Santa Barbara, it's a very liberal sort of open-minded. You're actually, it's actually a bad thing if you're not in therapy in this town rather than the other way around. So it's kind of an unusual place in that regard.
That's true. Yeah.
But I was curious about parents because, I mean, I know when I had my own spiritual awakening, my parents were still alive and they thought it was nuts. Basically they had no,
yeah.
I mean, you know, if it didn't happen in a temple, then it wasn't real as far as they were concerned.
Right.
you know, even though my experience with them in Temple was it was a good resting place for them to sleep, especially my dad, and snore, because that's all he did when he went to Temple was fall asleep and snore. But I guess that was his idea of a spiritual sleeping, not awakening. So, again, I'm super curious about how you bring this into the world in a more formal way, because it sounds like people find you and you take them through. How would you describe the program that you take them through? I looked on your website and read about it, but I'd love for you to talk about it if that's comfortable for you.
Yeah, of course. So really, I had, at first I was just offering healing services, and I finally at one point a few years ago decided, why not, you know, combine all my skill sets together. I really kept the two worlds really separate, and then I started to realize I was in particular attracting a specific type of person who wanted to either redesign their business or they're just starting out in the entrepreneurial journey. Oh. And I was able to help them, you know, download essentially their business model and help them understand, okay, here's the specific role that you're meant to have within the business. And that's, I think, where people trip up is sometimes people think, for example, oh, I'm going to go help others, so I'll become a coach. But really what they're good at is connecting people or networking or being an educator, right? So it's really helping people slot into the right way that they're bringing about their genius. And that's getting to know themselves on a deep level, beyond, you know, the previous roles that they held, right? Because whatever happens in our life, we're directed in specific roles. And maybe sometimes those roles are, you know, what we're innately gifted at. And sometimes it's just what was projected onto us as what we thought we should do. And so it's kind of unraveling, and having that distinction between what's truly something that would light you up and make you enjoy yourself and is easy for you to do and is a gift, and something that you potentially think you should do or you were told you are, you know?
Yeah, sure.
So it's really helping people through an exploration process, and I use different tools. I use the gene keys, which is this combination of human design, astrology, and I Ching. And it really goes into what our shadows are. And at the other end of what our shadow is actually our gift and what we're here to do.
Okay.
So it's really intriguing that sometimes, you know, what we think we're really bad at is actually what we're meant to transform, and then through that transformation, actually even turn that into a vocation.
Wow.
So it's
really fascinating. Especially because before we got started, I was joking about how technologically inept I am. So there's hope, is what you're telling me.
So maybe, you know, in the near future, you will advise people on how to start their own podcasts and use this tech with that as well.
So, Michelle, one of the things, one of the main reasons why I started my podcast and I call it Fear Me Out is because I believe that fear is a huge factor in most of our lives. Most businesses are run by fear. Most relationships are run by fear. And I'm wondering if that's something that you notice in your world, about how much fear holds people back. Notions about fear is that fear is really not the issue. It's how you choose to deal with it that determines the outcome. And most people fight it or try somehow to see it as their enemy rather than recognizing that if you don't have fear in your life, you're not going to live to see tomorrow. Now, I understand that it gets the better of us in places where it keeps us from being as productive as we would like to be. So I'm kind of curious about, is this something that you help people come to terms with, is their relationship to fear?
Yes, definitely. Absolutely. I think it's interesting when you can acknowledge that you have a fear of something, but sometimes people have a deep-seated fear that they don't know is even there.
Absolutely.
And it comes in the form of other things, like maybe procrastination around something, or not doing it, and then, you know, doing all the other things that we are comfortable doing. So if someone has a fear of public speaking or being visible, you know, maybe they'll try every other potential avenue before they do that. So it's interesting for me to kind of map out, okay, what's really going on here.
Yeah.
And so that's definitely one piece of it. And I think for people to start to, it's not like normalize fear, but have a different relationship to fear. Cause I think fear is always going to be there to some degree.
Sure.
But you know, you can transform it and transmute it by acknowledging it, and then maybe having specific tools that you can help yourself manage it in real time. And I think the more we put ourselves in situations that we're actually fearful of, the more we normalize it, and then we're over time may not even be fearful of it anymore. So okay. It's a little bit of practice. Like I used to be really afraid of driving. I can't really tell you why, but I mean, yes, some past life things probably. But I just, you know, when I moved to Florida, I just in a way forced myself to do it and did a little bit of subconscious work. And over time now I really truly enjoy it. And so, you know, I do think that there are certain things we can certainly overcome, and, you know, other ones, if we don't want to overcome it, I don't think we have to overcome every single fear, you know, that we have.
Right.
But the first part is acknowledging that it's even there, because sometimes we have a lot of it, it's just hidden.
Right. One of the things I ask people to think about is the notion that if you don't deal with fear and pain directly, there's a mechanism inside of us that turns it into aggression very, very quickly. And the way that shows up is that people become extremely critical of themselves or others or both as a way of managing the fear and the pain. Because when you're critical of yourself or other people, it gives you a feeling like you're in control of whatever it is that you're frightened about.
Mm.
I'm not sure if that's something that you've thought about before, the idea that we are masters at turning fear into aggression. And that a lot of times people are referred to me for anger management as an example.
Mm.
And I tell them, you know, you're actually not an angry person. You're a terrified person. You know, on the first report, he usually says, I'm not afraid of anything. And I said, well, just give me a chance to explain myself, because
you
realize that you're just trying to protect yourself because you feel like a little kid most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And using anger as a way of trying to keep yourself safe because of the vulnerability that you're not willing to acknowledge. And if you're willing to, like you say, recognize the fear instead of just reacting to it, all of a sudden the anger sort of dissipates because you're learning how to be more present to your own fear and pain. So
yeah.
I'm just kind of curious if that's a view that you kind of, that you're willing to kind of consider in working with people.
I mean, I do think that each person is individual in the way that it's expressed. Yeah, it could be aggression for some people. It's like fight or flight.
Yeah.
Freeze, or, you know, so there's those different types of reactions that people have. And so, you know, understanding which one you are as well. And I think the worst thing is also is internalizing that fear or anxiety, because that ends up becoming disease, you know, in the body as well. So in a way, the people who are aggressive, like, at least they're getting it out of their body in a way, to a degree. you know, it's probably, it's still like maybe not so good for their heart. but I think for the people who are like freezed up or are kind of, you know, keep it in, that actually can have even more serious implications.
Sure. Well, I think that if we were held accountable for the way we talk to ourselves, we'd all be in jail for assault.
Right.
Because you would never let anybody talk to you the way that you talk to yourself. And most people in that same boat, that somehow we take liberties with the notion that it's okay for us to be incredibly critical and then fall into a place of passivity, like you're talking about in terms of procrastination. That is actually a form of aggression against yourself, keeping yourself from doing what you want to do because you're too afraid to move forward.
Yeah.
But it's so common that people say, well, I'm just lazy. And my response is, I don't think so. I don't
think so.
I've never met a lazy person, except if you're an adolescent, but that's different. It's a different kind of laziness.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how do people find you in the course of your professional life? How do your clients find you?
Well, I want to say it's energy. if you're into that, but I really have gotten to a place where I've been very specific about the type of person that I work with. I have like a vision board, so to speak, of this person. And I go into different spaces. I'm in part of different networking groups and summits and podcasts, and naturally, you know, the right person that hears specific words or keywords that I say, you know, get intrigued about it. So it's a little bit of law of attraction meets, like, you know, being in the right spaces and places where my clients hang out.
Okay.
You can find me on my website, michelleparade.com. And then I'm also on LinkedIn and on Instagram as well. Although Instagram, I'm on and off publishing content on there, we'll be doing more.
When you say we, do you have people that work with you or for you?
I have different contractors that work with me. Yeah.
Okay. So it's not a sole proprietorship altogether. There are people that you enlist if you feel like they would be useful in the healing process with the people you work with.
No, I don't enlist anyone yet, anyways, to work with my clients directly. Oh. I just have people work, you know, helping me in my business.
So am I asking too much for you to describe your relationship to what you call energy? Because I think it's really fascinating. And I think that most people don't really understand how much energy exchange takes place between us and the world and other people and all of that. So I'm curious if you have a way of describing it that might be useful.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting question. It's hard to really describe, but I've gotten to a place where I have a very deep meditative practice.
Okay.
And I no longer have to do very much to sort of get into that zone. I used to do transformational meditation where, you know, you have to do like a mantra to kind of get yourself into a zone or, so, you know, when you can get yourself into a theta brainwave, or even so a delta brainwave, because that's when, you know, deep healing can happen. You're essentially connecting directly with that energy when your mind is at a slower brainwave and a slower pace. And that's when you kind of can get to a place where you feel that you're merging with this something that is not us.
Right.
And for me, you know, after once I get out of the meditation, I feel very elevated. I feel like I don't know how to describe this exact word, but it's almost like I'm now a galactic human. that's an extravagant word, but it's kind of how I feel is I have a new operating system where it feels like it's more efficient. It feels like I can go through the world with discernment. With discernment of, you know, what is for me and what I can leave alone. And so you're now operating from a higher level, where, you know, whereas before, you know, your mind might be super, you know, in a busy state, and you have different emotions coming through, anxiety or whatever else. And so that keeps you in a lower state where you may not make potentially the right decisions going forward. So that's why I really recommend everyone to meditate every day, because when you connect, that's when, you know, you can really see things differently and perceive what's happening around you in a different way.
Absolutely. One of the things that I encourage people to consider is being very specific about how they live their life, being very sort of proactive and specific, because I kind of look at it like when you go to a restaurant, you don't walk in and say, "Give me food."
Mm-hmm. Right?
Because the waiter or waitress will look at you like, okay.
Right.
Be a little bit more specific about what you're... And I think a lot of us go through life just with this idea that we're walking into a restaurant and just say, "Give me food," instead of being really, really specific about what it is that your heart desires.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of ask people if they're willing to place their order, whether it's if they're looking for a relationship or they're looking for some path in life, whatever it might be, because I think that the more specific you're willing to be, the more likely it is that the universe is going to kind of cooperate with your intention. Because I've met a lot of people that have actually found their life partner by really being specific about what they're looking for.
Yes.
And, you know, a lot of times those people are criticized, "Oh, you're being too picky," or whatever. And I think, "No, I'm not being picky enough."
Right.
What's going to happen if you're not picky enough is that you're going to get a hamburger with way too much mustard. And if you don't like mustard, it's not going to work.
Right.
So
exactly.
It's a really good idea to be very, very specific once you decide what direction you want to go. But I do believe that the main thing that gets in the way of people manifesting what it is that they desire is how they feel about themselves deep down inside.
Mm.
Because if you go into the restaurant and you don't believe you deserve food, it doesn't matter what order you place, you're not going to get it.
Right. Yeah. So
I'm assuming that part of the work that you do in the spiritual healing with people is to help them get to a place where they deserve the things that they desire,
mm-hmm.
and then move forward without getting in their own way as much as they would otherwise.
Yeah, I think that's definitely part of it. I think the first part, though, is knowing what you want. Because I think that's the easy part is doing the command. Like once you understand, okay, I can literally order my food to the universe, or order my soulmate to the universe. Like that's actually the easy part once you start to play with that. But It's actually deep down knowing what we truly desire, and sometimes we actually really don't know. And so it's this beautiful, and that shouldn't prevent us from trying. So I think it's this beautiful, like, let's order, see how I like that, and then tweak, and then consistently tweak from there. And the universe is always helping you kind of move into that evolved direction.
Okay.
There's always like, and we are innately desiring beings. So we're always going to want something more. It doesn't end, you know. It's like, now that I have this, like, what if, you know, something even bigger and better? So we constantly dreaming up the next thing, and that's kind of how we are.
Well, especially if you come from a Jewish family and you don't have that as a way of life, there's something really wrong with you.
True.
I remember growing up, and my parents were never satisfied with anything. They always wanted more. They always needed more. They always felt like if you accept what you have, then there's something really wrong with you. And I think it's kind of a cultural thing in some ways.
That is true. Yeah.
But part of what you're describing is having a healthy sense of maybe.
Yeah, I think it's having gratitude for what I do have today. It's not like oh man, I can't believe this happened. It's not from a victim place. It's just the realization that there's this constant, like, oh, there's a better way of doing this. There's a better way of going about this. There's a better way of, or there's an easier or faster way of bringing what I desire. And that's part of the journey. And it should be fun, part of the journey. Yeah.
Do you offer like seminars and that sort of thing also, or is it mostly individual work with people?
Currently I'm doing individual work, but that will potentially in the future, probably next year, I may start just, shorter master classes. But I really do mostly deep work with people, because I just find that, having one session here and there isn't going to move the needle too far. And so that's why, that it's typically, 6 months or so of work with people that I, in this deep work of, it's an exploration of self. And then how am I going to then take the action steps and really bring that into fruition.
So Michelle, if you have someone that wants to work with you, and after you work with them, you kind of discover that they have a lot of really deep trauma in their history and in their body, is that something that you feel comfortable helping them come to terms with?
Yeah, so it is something that I intuitively can heal and work with them on.
Okay.
So, typically if there is some kind of disease, if there's always, or an ailment or something, there's always some link to it, some thought patterns, some emotions. So we break down what that is.
Okay.
Sometimes it means that they have to leave the job that they're in, or they have to leave the relationship that they're in, and suddenly all their all their physical problems go away, so that some of it can really be that quick. But it is part of the process as well.
So that's something you're comfortable with?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just trying to get a super clear picture of the people that that you're looking to work with, because I'm assuming that people will listen to this podcast and others that you've been on. And I'm assuming that that's a great way for people to find you and to be able to participate on what you bring to the table.
Yes, absolutely.
What else should I know, or could I know, about you and what you're doing?
Let's see, what can I add? I mean,
I know that you wrote a book. Is that fair to ask?
Yes. I am part of a multi-author book called Success with Source.
Okay.
And it's really talking about the chapter that I wrote is really the iteration of how I started out as a healer and then really moved into doing this more specific work. You know, even though I would say still I'm doing healing work, but it's a very unique cross section, and the journey that it, you know, that I went to find a business model that took into account my skill set and also was needed. And so it's called, you know, Ikigai. It's like this cross section of everything. And it was really this journey of how can I make this work as a living, you know? And I think a lot of people wonder that when they pursue their passion, because sometimes it's just like, oh, okay, if I pursue my passion, it means I'm going to have to be like a beggar, you know, or I'm going to have to make some lifestyle changes. And it's like, no, maybe you just need to figure out the right business model, the right container through which, you know, you can bring in that abundance and do what you like to do. So that was really my journey of kind of some failures along the way, for sure. Okay. And I already have in my mind a couple of new business models I will evolve into. and so it's, I feel that every year I'm reinventing myself, but it's like this new layer of what I'm doing. So eventually I'll be starting up an incubator as well, to help entrepreneurs find the financing, find the support, because I just find that as a society, we're not giving entrepreneurs enough enough support to succeed overall. There's really a lot of amazing individuals, and it has nothing to do with them whether they, well, to a degree it can, you know, the mindset piece, but other factors like financing and team and support and all those things, I think as a society we're doing a really bad job of helping them. And so it's creating more of those ecosystems so that we can bring about, you know, these beautiful, beautiful businesses that are really impacting the world.
Do you run into people that take issue with some of the terms you use and the ways that you look at the world? I'm smiling because all I tell people I'm a psychologist and I can empty out a room in no time flat. So, I don't know if you have the same experience.
Well, I do it anyway. I say what I want to say and how I want to say it. And if they end up unsubscribing to my email list as a result, it is what it is. You know, I think I know that the way I express myself, it attracts a specific type of person, and that's all that I care about is those particular people, you know, who get it in a way. I'm not trying to really blend in and serve everybody. You know, I'm trying to serve a specific type of people who are, you know, spiritually curious at the least. Yeah.
Well, and I love what you have to say, and I like, you know, what you're presenting. But I know sometimes when I talk about stuff, the kind of stuff you're talking about, people are like, what?
Yeah.
Because it's not, in quotes, the norm, even though it's really fascinating. And I think it's incredibly helpful. And certainly as in my training as a therapist, talking about things of a spiritual nature was actually forbidden in a way. Right. Because, you know, initially, and this is back, you know, when dinosaurs were still walking around and I was in school, religion and people that believed in God and all of that stuff are looked at as having mental illness.
Right.
You know, I know things have changed a bit, but not so much in a lot of the world. And in even a lot of the United States, people are very kind of rigid and look at things a certain way. So I love it when I meet someone like yourself that's willing to put themselves out there in a way where, you know, hopefully it'll wake some people up and help them really look at things in a different way, because it's so necessary.
I do think that, you know, maybe today someone might think, oh, this is some cuckoo stuff. But then, you know, a few years later, they're actually ready, and maybe they remember, oh yeah, you know, faintly remember, oh, there was this, I remember this, you know, podcast episode, and they were talking about that thing, you know. But so everybody is ready in their own time. I remember, I mean, I think 10 years ago, someone tried to do Reiki on me, and I was like, ooh, what are you doing? You know, and it's just hilarious that now I'm doing like way crazier things than that with people. And so, you know, it shouldn't prevent us from speaking about it. And I think people will come around in their own time.
Is it accepted in the community that you live in, or is most of the work you do outside of where you live?
Like I said, I do everything remotely. So I want to say I have a virtual community. And so I find people in all different corners of the world, ultimately. I do think that when you get to a specific vibration, you know, when you're doing more energy work, you find those people really everywhere.
Yes. Yeah. I will say that one of the most amazing things that's come out of doing a podcast and appearing on other people's podcasts is that I had no idea there were so many lovely people in the world. I live in a bubble, and I've lived in my little bubble for, you know, 35, 40 years. It's a really beautiful bubble. I mean, if you look at my window, there's a 180 degree view of the ocean, and it's really very sweet, but it is not normal, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Santa Barbara's not a normal place. It's just been discovered that it's the fourth most expensive city, not just in the United States, but in the world. And that's nuts, right? To live in a community where, you know, a poor person has to make a couple hundred thousand dollars a year just to be able to afford their rent. It's not normal. So the cool thing that I'm discovering now is having conversations with the people all around the country and the world, and realizing there's a lot of people that are really interested in being of service and trying to do the best they can to help people heal and live a much better life. And I didn't really understand it as much as I do now. It's very inspiring to have conversations with people like yourself. I love it.
Likewise, I'm so glad that, you know, we can talk on the same wavelength. And that's so special that this has been like a portal for you to open it up to feel like, wow, actually I'm not alone. And
yeah,
understanding this, and there's other people exploring, and there's a lot of undercover people. Yeah. they're everywhere.
The first decision I had to make was what I joke around by saying I had to come out of the therapy closet and really expose myself and what I do in a way that I've never done before. Because, again, I don't have much relationship with my colleagues, or a few that I refer to, but I really have kept it separate because I know what I do is very different than most clinical psychologists anyway. I don't diagnose people. I don't pathologize them. I'm not even remotely interested in coming up with a, in quotes, treatment plan. So I don't fit in any way with most of where my colleagues live in the world. So that's really fun. So again, we don't need to talk about me. What I'm curious about, because we only got about five or so minutes left, I just want to know if there's more that you want to say that I haven't asked you about.
I don't know. I think, back to you and your comment, I was just going to say that I think that, you know, people are attracted to working with you specifically because perhaps you're not necessarily, or you're moving away from the traditional methods, right? I think people, are attracted to different ways of therapy, and there's many different kinds. And so the way that you bring about your therapy is perfectly suited for a specific, you know, group of people. And so I don't think there's any one right way, you know. I think it's just the right way for that, you know, individual and where they're at. So,
well, what I ask people to think about all the time is that the most important thing you can do is show the world your version of love and what that looks like, because I think everybody has a different version of them. And when you talk about what you do, your version of love comes out really clearly and loudly. And I don't think you realize it, but it shows up really clearly. It shows up in your eyes and in the way you smile and all of that stuff. And I just think that the more people that are willing to kind of consider, that's one of the main reasons we're here, is to show people what our version of love looks like.
Mm.
That simplifies a lot in terms of what your life purpose might be all about, because then it's about trying to figure out how to show love. Not that that answers the question about how to do it specifically, but I think it helps.
No, that's really beautiful. I feel like I sometimes can overcomplicate it, and it's just as simple as that. It's just, you know, being in someone's presence is maybe enough, you know.
Well, also quite simple minded, so I try to keep it simple, because
I think it's profound. You know, maybe that's it, right? It's like, perhaps they get a conversation, or maybe they have an aha moment, maybe they don't, but I think it's just the experience of being in your presence, and because of the fact of you wanting the best, you know, for that person.
Absolutely.
I don't think there's not too many spaces where we can feel that in general. So
Michelle, before I let you go, I would love for you to one more time tell us how to reach you, what the best way is to kind of understand what you bring to the table and all that stuff.
Sure. Yeah. So I have a lot of free resources on my website. So feel free to check those out. I have a brilliance archetype quiz.
Okay.
There's 12 archetypes. So I'm curious, you know, which one you will get. And I mean, I probably can guess, but yeah, so you can start there. I have a masterclass about how energetics can help you also within your business. And I've got, a few other templates. So feel free to check those out as a starting place.
It's at michelleprod.com.
Yes.
That,
that's
okay.
Right. Yeah.
Sure. Do you want to spell your last name so everybody knows it?
Yeah, it says P-A-R-A-D.
Okay.
It's like parade without the E.
Without the E. Okay. Yeah. That's
cool. It actually means parade in Russian and other languages. So,
so you're out for a human parade.
I'm sure my ancestors, you know, maybe they were some clowns.
Well, yeah. I thank you so much for being on my show. I'm going to turn off the recording now, so hold on, okay?
We appreciate our listeners and are interested in your comments and suggestions. Feel free to email us at fearmeoutpodcast@gmail.com. If you are interested in becoming a sponsor for this podcast, please email us at fearmeoutpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. See you next time.